Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
And welcome to the NXT TakeOver Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dudley Boys, Michael Sidgwick from What Culture, to review everything that happened on last night's NXT TakeOver 36. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review NXT, but also Raw, SmackDown, AEW Dynamite, AEW Rampage, pay-per-views, we have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week, complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on WrestleCulture. As I said, though, joined by Michael Sidgwick to review NXT TakeOver 36. I've got to admit, Sidge, I was a little bit apprehensive heading into this show. We'd had, obviously, Rampage and the debut of CM Punk, a topsy-turvy SummerSlam with some huge moments and a few decent matches, but a bit all over the place, to be perfectly honest. And I was worried that TakeOver was going to be a bit of an afterthought, and there wasn't a lot of anticipation, I think it's fair to say, heading into this show. But I have to say, I woke up this morning, watched TakeOver, and absolutely loved it. In particular, I mean, we already knew that they had the capability of pulling off a five-star match. But yet again, Walter and Dragunov just smashed it, didn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought TakeOver on the whole was really, really strong. Hey, Vic Joseph, what did you think? It was great! I think if it weren't for... If you take Walter Dragunov out of the equation, you're left with a momentous, climactic, pretty good, not great TakeOver, but god damn, that match was phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. Murray just watched it in the office on his lunch break there, and as soon as I heard Vic Joseph, I was like, oh Christ, I'm going to have to listen to him again, purely because that match was so great. So I watched the last 10 minutes over his shoulder. My god, that was the best WWE match of the year. For the second year running, Volta and Ilya Dragunov have the best match in all of WWE. And the irony is, the WWE Defense Squad, who would describe me as being biased, probably don't know who Ilya Dragunov is. So watch him. He's really good. Like, he's phenomenal, in fact. But yeah, I had a good time watching the show. I don't think it was anything that was exceptional outside of that. But, you know, as a viewing experience, it wasn't totally excessive in length, parodic in its working style. Let's break it down. I generally had a good time watching this.
I don't think they put a foot wrong. I mean, it's a sort of a show that you're inclined to heap praise on in terms of the fact that a lot of the wins were babyface wins, so you're in a better mood naturally in amongst it all. And I got a little bit annoyed with the crowd more so than WWE or the wrestlers at one point, which I'm sure we'll get into. But yeah, let's start at the beginning of the show because the show opened with the Million Dollar Championship match. It was LA Knight versus Cameron Grimes, baby, to the moon. With the stipulation being, of course, Cameron Grimes wanted to win the Million Dollar Championship, and if he lost, then Ted DiBiase would become LA Knight's butler. And Cameron Grimes comes out in his stupid butler outfit, rips it off, puts it in a Million Dollar bin, and he's got this waistcoat with the dollar signs on and stuff. He comes out, LA Knight comes out furious, kicks the bin, and they get straight into it. The story of the match was Grimes continuously, especially early on, going for the million-dollar dream. Knight countered that by rolling out to the floor, avoided a few kicks, but then Grimes catches him. And then Ted DiBiase whips Grimes into a dropkick on LA Knight. Love that little assist there. Later on, they're back in the ring, and Knight turns the tide by tripping Grimes into the bottom rope. Always panics me when they do those sorts of spots, because it's like, you can there's only a certain way you can sort of protect that sort of thing. Anyway, Knight hits a bulldog, hits a burning hammer for a two count, and they trade strikes. Knight sends Grimes out to the floor, and then Grimes recovers, skins the cat, and hits his brilliant running Spanish fly for a near fall. So Knight pops Grimes up on the top rope, hits a top rope German. He gets a near fall off that. But then Grimes counters the BFT and locks on the million-dollar dream finally. Knight cradles him, but Grimes doesn't let it go. He kicks out of the pinfall, but keeps hold of it. And so Knight just sends them both through the ropes to eventually break that. Knight is fed up at this point. He is desperate as well. So he goes out, he picks up his million-dollar championship, brings it into the ring. Grimes nails him with a kick as he comes in. So Ted DiBiase takes the title, or the referee gets rid of it, I should say. Ted DiBiase gets into it with LA Knight on the outside as the referee is dealing with the title and Grimes. So DiBiase just twats LA Knight. And then DiBiase puts the belt back in to the back into the ring. That gets the referee to get rid of it again so he can put LA Knight in the million-dollar dream, sends him back in, and Grimes hits the cave in. 1, 2, 3. Cameron Grimes finally is your million-dollar champion. Great opener, I thought.
I thought this was very good, and I also thought it was a very appropriate slash fitting payoff to the wider storyline, in that it was really entertaining, actually good, maybe a bit too long.
Mm.
Maybe 2 or 3 minutes I got lost when I realised that they were going to go about 15, 16, but... And there was one, it's the sort of thing, if you're going to be a pedantic dick about it, which I'm not, I usually am about NXT as well, which probably speaks a lot to how much this put me in a decent mood early in the wee hours as a UK viewer. I don't know if DiBiase's timing was off or the referee was a little bit more inexperienced, but it kind of didn't work. Some of the outside stuff, if you want to apply logic to it, but I didn't want to. I thought it was a really fun match. I really liked the characters, the hype are entertaining. Some of the work as well was far better than the reputation that LA Knight has got. It wasn't a blowaway match, but it was really well done, really well crafted, really entertaining. It actually had a bit of heft to it as well. As you said, Cameron Grimes took some like horrendous looking bumps. Very well, of course. He's a very good professional wrestler. What I'm getting at is that he added to the drama by going all in. It wasn't just a fluff TV match. I think they struck the balance of a pretty difficult job. They had it was an entertaining show opener. They had to get the crowd, what few members of there are, on board. They had to like wrestle a good match. That is part of the brand's ethos, or at least it was, because this was essentially WrestleMania 17 in a social club. So I'd do something entertaining, that'd do something good, that'd do something with a nice feel good ending. I thought they accomplished all of that with a nice little hybrid of wrestling and sports entertainment. 2 minutes too long, probably, but and a little bit illogical with the ref stuff, or just beset with timing issues. But look, I really enjoyed this. LA Knight, considering he arrived in NXT, with people were being a little bit cruel, I thought, because, you know, his reputation as a guy who thinks he's The Rock when he's working Impact, there's a bit of dissonance there. But I think he's done a bang-up job, and I really enjoyed this. And one more thing before we move on. It was weird. Cameron Grimes in that Ted DiBiase gear, you always run the risk of, oh, does it just look like a mark? Loving the 80s guys, as so many of these, you know, millennial wrestlers do. I reckon that was somewhere between AJ Styles and Ric Flair's robe and Darby Allin's Sting. Those are the two extremes. Darby Allin's Sting just works and it's amazing, because it's almost like Sting loves being around Darby Allin as much. Ric Flair and AJ Styles' robe was just, how can we get these little vanilla midgets over? Horrendous. I would put Grimesy in the middle of that, which is a decent achievement. It could have looked so bad, but it's Cameron Grimes, he's just over as hell, isn't he?
Mm. Cheers, toots.
That's the last time you're going to get to say that.
Okay.
You can if you want, but I don't really think there's going to be much in the horizon for old LA Knight.
But like we've talked about this in the build to it, and me and Hamflet mentioned it in the preview over the weekend. Credit where it's due, like you say, not only to LA Knight, but across the board really to WWE, because I think this entire package storyline from beginning to end to, you know, Cameron Grimes, obviously, initial interactions with Ted DiBiase and then bringing LA Knight into it and the title and then the initial title win for LA Knight and the story that's led to this. I think it's been one of the better things that they've done this year.
It has. I would like to know what would have happened had NXT done this kind of storytelling at the start of the Wednesday Night War.
Yeah.
I'm working on a project, as you all know, or some of you know, and I'm currently revisiting those early battles of the Wednesday Night War. And people are going, yeah, NXT really suffered as a result of the pandemic. Isn't this Capital Wrestling Center a bit of a bummer? No, the booking was a bummer. Like, I'm wading through, like, Kushida stealing Cameron Grimes' hat. Oh, there's a match. Cameron Grimes just getting punched in the face off Tyler Bate, who's a baby face. All right, they'll have a match. Killian Dane threatening to break Pete Dunne in half. Pete Dunne in response going, I don't care about Killian Dane. Adam Cole working Dominik Dijakovic in a ladder match to get the advantage in War Games match. Just like, Jesus Christ, how much do you want us to watch this show? Too bloody much. If they'd actually crafted a storyline like this, instead of just doing the most grabby, basic, oh Christ, we need a banger. steal someone's hat. Or you could just go, write a storyline.
Yeah.
Who knows? Who the hell knows?
And so bloody serious back then as well.
Christ as well. So friggin' drab. Slipknot, Marrow, hat theft. Like, gives a goddamn break. They deserve to lose. Mm-hmm. Maybe they wouldn't if they'd actually put the thought that has gone into the storyline, because it's gone long, but like, LA Knight has been so entertaining throughout it in particular. Mm. Say it again.
She does. Then we got the NXT Women's Championship match, Raquel Gonzalez versus Dakota Kai, and yet again, NXT. This is like back in the day when I used to never watch the TV and just watch the takeovers. The video package for this was just like, well, this is one of the best storylines they've got going right now in terms of her turning on her best friend, and, you know, as long as you've got me by your side, you're going to be NXT Women's Champion. It just sold it perfectly. And the story of the match was, you know, Gonzalez is the... It's sort of weird to have it this way around in terms of the heel is using her speed and quickness and the baby face is just power moves, but that's exactly what it was. She puts Gonzalez early on in a cross arm breaker, for example, but Gonzalez eventually fights back, hits power slams. Kai hits her with a diving crossbody, but Gonzalez catches her, rolls through, and drops her over the ropes. And so then Kai responds by, again, targeting Gonzalez's arm over the top rope. She hits a Yakuza kick. She comes in, she gets a two count, hits a draping face breaker for another two count. So Gonzalez's arms have been weakened, so when she goes for a powerbomb, Kai can then subsequently turn that into a flying triangle, to which Gonzalez gets out of that by just hoying Dakota Kai into the corner, basically. Kai gets another great near fall after hitting the chiropractor, gets in Gonzalez's face. Gonzalez goes for a spinebuster, but Kai fights out, climbs the ropes, and hits a brilliant diving double stomp for a near fall. They're on the top rope. Kai escapes. Kai hits a pump kick. She goes to hit that running Yakuza kick of hers, but Gonzalez catches her and hits a second rope finisher bomb off the second rope for the victory. As anticipated, Raquel Gonzalez retains the NXT Women's Championship, but in a very exciting moment after the match as well, Gonzalez is celebrating when Kaylee Ray's music hits. She walks out onto the ramp. It looks like she may well be next for Raquel Gonzalez. The perfect, I think, heel opponent next for Raquel Gonzalez. But what do you think, and what did you reckon to the match?
Kaylee Ray's really good. No one reacted to the music, but that's an NXT UK problem for you. I thought Dakota Kai individually might never have looked better than she did in this match. And I don't want to no-sell Raquel Gonzalez's contribution. She did one particular awesome spot of pure defiance, which just grabbed her by the face. Yes. That was tits. That was awesome. This was a match that the build deserved so much more for, because it was rushed. And you could tell Dakota Kai's main roster bound. So this had to get it out of the way and burn through every beat. But it felt like they'd put so much effort and thought into really crafting this match as an almost passion project that it must be, because they've been building this thing, knowing that the second they were paired together, being wrestling, they were like, right, okay, at some point we're going to have a match. Hopefully the stakes will be big, it'll be for the title or whatever. And it feels like they've really wanted to pay off just how much the fans few of them, but enough to not get it cancelled anyway, have invested in this match. Just these lovely little details. That spot where she grabbed her by the face was great. Dakota Kai, like her evasions in the way she was, like the unique way she was running the ropes and like using misdirection to launch into her attacks, like she could not have done more to put Raquel Gonzalez over as someone. Like, if you get in too close proximity to her, you are going to get damaged. And I thought she was so creative, and it had such a dramatic effect in terms of, like, when she was bouncing off the ropes and sliding underneath, it really felt like she's really trying not to get hurt by this person. Mm-hmm. And when she did get hurt by said person, it had a massively, like, cathartic, dramatic effect. Great heel work, great in-ring performance, like... And you know what, Gonzalez, who isn't obviously as good, I don't think she got carried here. She was every bit up for, like, really putting the effort into the work. Like, her bump for the chiropractor looked class. I really, really enjoyed this, and it was a much-needed return to form for the NXT Women's Division, which it's gone downhill, let's face it. In 2020, outside of Rhea Ripley, and particularly in late 2019, people were raving about it as probably the best product in North American history. We're a long way since that, but my God, this did much to restore a lot of trust in the division, because this match was class.
And like you say, Kaylee Ray's a really exciting opponent next.
Yes, absolutely. The best thing about Kaylee Ray, she's really good at her craft, but she's also like really unhinged and committed in her work. Like, she'll bump the hell off that apron to put Gonzalez over, and she needs to be put over as a monster because that aura's kind of deserted her through the booking. So yeah, Kaylee Ray is almost perfect, I agree.
And, you know, there's a reason why they gave her such a lengthy title reign in NXT UK, of course. And speaking of NXT UK, next we got Walter versus Ilya Dragunov. Surreal, this, because he got a 2 out of 3 falls match coming in a bit, and I'll swear my notes for this are maybe longer than my notes for the 2 out of 3 falls match, and the length was almost the same. 25 or so minutes, I think, for the Kyle O'Reilly versus Adam Cole match. This one went about 22 minutes, but it did not drag at all. And, you know, it said, you went in with incredibly high expectations, because they're basically saying, we're going to run back a 5-star match, the best match of WWE last year, but on a bigger stage with people there. And yet, obviously, they just kicked the crap out of each other. Look at Dragunov's chest, for example, when he was proclaiming he was the wrestling czar or whatever it was later. But, oh, just jaw-dropping, this. I'll try and mention as much as I can, but obviously, if you haven't watched that, go and watch it before we talk about it, because, oh, goodness me. So, early on, Walter hits a hip toss, and Dragunov is frustrating him immediately. He's avoiding all the chops. He's hitting chops of his own. Dragunov is just avoiding him, attacking him, but not getting hit, basically. Walter goes for a leapfrog as Dragunov's doing a rope run. Dragunov catches him and slams him and does a side headlock takeover. Goes for a key lock. Walter powers out, pops, just places him on the top rope, and caves his chest in already with a chop that sends Dragunov to the floor. As I will not mention it more than once in here, but often if I'm talking about stuff happened and then something else happened, expect it's them just chopping the crap out of each other. Walter reverses, what's it called? The Constantine Special, I believe it's called, into a overhead Uranagi suplex, and then just nails Dragunov with a boot. And you're thinking, okay, I've seen, you know, big hits and boots and chops and what have you. I know how this works. And then Walter just goes, yeah, what if I chop him on the back? Oh my days. Chops the soul out of his body. But Dragunov, because he's bonkers, fires up and takes down a Walter with a clothesline. Hits a pump handle suplex, climbs the ropes, hits a diving drop kick, lands a top rope senton from the opposite corner, goes for his torpedo Moscow, but Walter counters that into a sleeper suplex. So Dragunov just gets up, gets out of it, and hits the torpedo Moscow to the back of Walter's head, and then hits another one for a great near fall. Walter goes up top. He's going to hit that huge splash that, of course, won him the title. But Dragunov gets up there, hits a superplex, hits a missile dropkick. They're both down. Walter, I can't believe I'm saying this again. I shouldn't be surprised, but still. Walter hits a shotgun dropkick and a stack powerbomb for another near fall. And then just looks at Dragunov and slaps him as hard as he can across the face. Running knee, powerbomb, and then he hits that top rope splash. One, two, Dragunov kicks out the near falls. I know we saw them, most of them, before in this match, but I still bought on every single one. He just starts pounding, if you're Michael Cole. goes for the clutch. Dragunov flips out of it, hits a diving headbutt, and the desperation, as we saw in the first match, is key here from Dragunov. He's just please don't get up, basically. Hitting him with elbows, putting in a sleeper. Walter climbs the ropes and just jumps. Just goes, well, it's the only way out of this. I'm just going to jump and to try and break out of it. And Dragunov goes, all right, let go. And then just starts elbowing him again, locks in the sleeper. Walter gets to his feet, falls backwards. Dragunov won't let go. Desperately just nailing him, striking him, cross faces, rabbit punches, and then finally he locks in the sleeper one final time. Walter staggers and submits to Ilya Dragunov, who ends like an 870-odd day run of Walter with the NXT UK Championship and is just overwhelmed. I'm breathless just talking about it. I couldn't believe this match.
This was absolutely incredible, phenomenal, exhilarating, realistic, violent, intense, professional wrestling. By orders of magnitude, the best WWE match of the year. They will never beat this. They might not beat this, and this is no exaggeration, given the complexion of the new model archetype of NXT recruits. They might never beat this. Depending on what Walter does next, and Dragunov is phenomenal, but I think Volta is the better performer. But then on this night, Dragunov looked like the best professional wrestler in the world. Mm-hmm. I don't think he is. He's certainly up there. But he is the true genius for me of this performance. Ilya Dragunov had to tell the story of, right, I'm a professional wrestler. This is the pinnacle of my career. I have to literally perform as if this is the fight of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And he did precisely that. Imagine, like, all right, Wilborn, you have to do the best podcast of your entire life.
Yeah.
Sidgwick, today at work, you have to write the best article you've ever written. It's like, I don't know if I can do that. Like, I really don't. Dragunov, right? What you're doing is you're winning the title, but you're winning it from this guy who in NXT canon is virtually undefeated in singles competition, like God of a bloke, a total colossus. You have to credibly, convincingly beat him and enter your best performance. Can you do that? And he's like, yes. Jesus Christ, the intent behind everything that he did, particularly in the last 5 minutes when he was like doing, in football parlance, like a horror tackle in Volta's neck and throat. Karrion Kross, please look at how Dragunov did that forearm to the back at the last second. That was unbelievable. The pacing, the fire, the sheer exhaustion and anguish of the selling, which was never abandoned. The fire-up spots are the fire-up spots. They measured it perfectly. Like Tomohiro Ishii would have purred watching this match. That's the highest compliment I could possibly give it. The suplex, when he drills him on his head and Dragunov, no, I'm not going to sell that. This is the fight of my goddamn life. I will do something first and then I'll sell it because I need to keep you down. When he just did the cannonball, I watched that twice because, again, I watched it in the morning and I watched it with Murray again on my lunch. If you look at the suplex, the sheer timing of everything in this match, it was unbelievable. He gets dropped on his head, but it's like the roll-through effect, so he doesn't really take it that badly. It just looks horrendous. Masters of technique, masters of emotion. This was unbelievably great professional wrestling. WWE will never do a match like this again. If you are looking at the gloomiest forecast, and Nick Khan was literally your weatherman in an interview with Ariel Helwani last night, the notes of which you can follow at M. Sidgwick on Twitter, you'll never see anything quite like this in WWE again. Just absolutely blistering, You have to watch it. Mm. There are certain moments where Dragunov is just refusing. It's not no selling. He knows how much it hurts. He just can't acknowledge how much it hurts, because if he does that, he's down for the count.
Mm.
You'll struggle to see a more spirited performance than this. And if you think it's too much in terms of how much violence they inflicted on one another, everything that was done on their heads was done so safely if you scrutinize it closely. They smacked the piss out of each other, but in safe places.
Yeah.
Unreal. Unreal.
I couldn't get enough of this. I thought it was, like I said, I went in going, you know, sort of arms folded. Go on then, top what you did last year. And they did for me. And genuine surprise at Dragunov, despite, you know, like you said, the spirit of performance. I thought, oh, God, he's going to be another fantastic, plucky loser. And then he not only beats Walter, he submits him. And, yeah, talk about springboard for him as the new NXT UK champion. And really excited to see what they do next with Walter as well.
And provided it's not on NXT UK, I am too. But then, can you imagine him? If he goes on NXT, fine, great. To be mooted that he might have a feud with the winner of the main event, in fact. Bang up for that.
Oh, yes.
If he goes to Raw SmackDown, you can carve his gravestone right now. Vince McMahon will never let him do a match like this in a million years. He will take one look at him and think, oh, you're fat.
Mm-hmm.
And he will never allow him to do a tenth of what he's done here. His aura will disappear. Form a prayer circle if you love this match, because Volta might make NXT America, if you like, genuinely get back to the top of the pile in terms of in-ring work rate, at least when he's in the ring.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
We go backstage, and it is a celebration for Ted DiBiase and the new million-dollar champion, Cameron Grimes. They're literally just passing out money at this point. And DiBiase puts over Grimes, saying he's carrying on the legacy of the million-dollar man. And it's something that got me very giddy, Michael Sidgwick. They announced the million-dollar celebration for this week's NXT. I can't imagine what they're going to do for that.
Can't either. We'll save it for the preview, but insert heel will interrupt probably. But that's fine.
Yeah. And we got Samoa Joe pacing back and forth, of course, ahead of his NXT Championship match with Karrion Kross, when William Regal walks in and says, I'm supposed to stay unbiased, but please kill Karrion Kross for me, effectively, which I thought was a nice touch too.
It was nice. It actually felt like an organic conversation, and it wasn't like William Regal was being unfair. It was just...
Right, then we got the undisputed finale, the 2 out of 3 falls match, Kyle O'Reilly versus Adam Cole. I went into this with the polar opposite feeling that I had compared to the NXT UK Championship match of, oh God, what are they going to do here then? I was thinking 40, 50 minutes. And I have to say, credit to both guys here. And I've said this several times already today, particularly on our news. Your WWE, if he hasn't signed with AEW, we'll talk post-match about his NXT farewell, effectively. If you're WWE and he hasn't, for whatever reason, signed with AEW, give him everything he wants. whether it be money, whether it be doing a Twitch channel, whether it be up, up, down, down, whether it be Uno. I don't know. I don't care. But Adam Cole is what has to stay in WWE for them, in my opinion. Obviously, do great stuff in AEW. We'll talk about that in a second, because let's talk about this match. Because, yeah, I just thought it completely superseded all my anticipations for it. And it made me remember, oh, yeah, Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly are sensational pro wrestlers. And as long as Triple H doesn't go 40 minutes minimum, lads, and gets his grubby little fingers on and goes, oh, three stages of hell, remember that? Then you get stuff like this. I just adored this. I'm gonna complain in a bit. I'm gonna moan about the audience because I was furious at the end. But I thought they just encapsulated their entire story together in this match. So early on, this is just a straight pinfall submission match initially, of course. Cole tries to suplex O'Reilly into the steel steps. We know that's played into their relationship before. So O'Reilly counters it and hits a brainbuster on the floor. O'Reilly hits a front kick in the ring, palm strike, gets in mount, gets into an ankle lock position, but Cole kicks out and hits a leaping knee for two. O'Reilly goes up top, eventually gets Cole down, goes for that diving knee of his, but gets caught by a wonderfully timed super kick. But as Cole goes to the Panama Sunrise, O'Reilly counters it, cradles, first pinfall in 3.5 minutes. And I just thought, oh my God, they've been listening.
They've learned.
So the second fall is, of course, a street fight. Also, a subversion of what we normally anticipate, i.e. babyface does not normally get the first fall. All the stipulation that they pick, that never normally happens. It's usually flip reversed. But no, this fall two is a street fight, as picked by Adam Cole. So Cole legs it out to the floor. So O'Reilly goes out after him and takes him out, puts him on a chair, puts a trash can on his head. First thing they're doing in the street fight, puts a trash can on his head and just running drop kicks it. And I thought, well, we're in for a good little street fight then, if that's the beginning. O'Reilly goes to climb the ropes, but Cole catches him with a super kick. And O'Reilly falls and injures his ribs on the apron. This would be the story of this match, of Cole then targeting that midsection. Cole tries to whip O'Reilly into the chair that he's wedged into the corner, but O'Reilly rolls out to avoid it, but clips his ribs on the ring post. I love the fact that it wasn't just this is this spot. This is, like, that transition there was really good. So Cole gets in, gets a kendo stick, of course, doesn't break it, but twats O'Reilly a lot on the ribs, basically. Goes to go for the last shot, so O'Reilly covers up. So he just stops and goes, oh, well, you're not protecting your ribs anymore. You're covering your head. Bang, just hits him on that. Cole, this might be a worrying sign if you're a WWE of things to come, puts a lockjaw on O'Reilly and then uses the kendo stick in there for leverage. So Cole rolls out to the floor, wraps a chain around his fist, and just that face of his, just the sadistic, ha-ha, I'm going to kill him with this, looks up, colorizing the exact same thing across the other side of the ring. A little bit, you know, performative stuff, but hopefully, I'll get your thoughts on it in a second, but hopefully, you know, not one final beat levels of melodrama in amongst all this. So they get in and just use, their chain-assisted right hands to batter each other. Cole hits a super kick out of nowhere for a two count. They go to the ramp. Cole hits a thrust kick on O'Reilly's injured ribs. O'Reilly puts him in a guillotine and then hoists him off the ramp into the plexiglass in front of all the fans. O'Reilly goes up top, prior to this, they've set up the chairs and they've done that thing where it's not the two seated parts of the chairs together, it's the two backs of the chairs together. And you think, right, who's going to have to eat that, because that's going to suck? Well, it was O'Reilly, because Cole, when O'Reilly went up top, popped up and just hoied him onto the edge of the chairs. Just horrific, that. And hits the last shot for a pinfall. One all, 17 minutes gone. I mean, unless this steel cage match is half an hour, maybe they're onto something here. There was also a big spit here. Obviously, the cage sides have got to come down and what have you. Split second when I was watching this, because obviously normally in WWE main roster, the steel cage is built already and it's above it. And I was looking going, they've not put steel cage up there. So I didn't see it initially.
Yeah, I thought it was going to go 2-0.
I was like, you can't do a 2-0-er.
Not at least make it seem like it's not going to be an obvious 2-0.
And then, yes, but they were there and they got lowered in amongst all this. They spent a long time checking on Kyle O'Reilly. Cole couldn't care less, continued to batter him, was not going to let him just recover whatsoever. Power bombs him onto the announce desk before hoying him in as the cage gets all fixed into position. But O'Reilly fights back. He does that spot where you've got the wrestler between the ropes and the cage and just hits repeated running forearms, a diving knee drop as Cole's draped over the ropes that looked great. Sort of Nyla Rose-esque, I suppose you'd say. O'Reilly goes for the diving knee off the top rope, though. Misses. Cole goes for the last shot, misses. And O'Reilly hits a last shot of his own for a brilliant near fall again. Cole, of course he does, hits a low blow, climbs the cage. Looks like maybe he's just going to leg it out of there, but O'Reilly gets back up and they're on the top rope twatting each other. Cole sends O'Reilly back down to the mat with a huge right hand and Cole comes off the ropes to hit a spectacular Panama Sunrise for a near fall. And Cole, realizing he's exhausted all of his maneuvers, decides to cheat yet again, cut corners. He breaks out the handcuffs Kyle O'Reilly to the top rope. I wonder what on earth was going on at this point. How on earth are you going to do a finish there? So he handcuffs O'Reilly to the top rope. Super kick, super kick, super kick. But as he goes for another one, Kyle O'Reilly catches one, heel hook, and with one arm, yes, I suppose technically using the other arm with leverage for power in this, he submits Adam Cole. He wins. Kyle O'Reilly is finally victorious in this undisputed finale. And the crowd chant BS. Inexplicable, this for me. But I'll let you talk about it before I say what I have to say about this. But, I mean, you and I went in, as did Hamflet, very nervous about how this was going to be the legacy of Adam Cole if he is, as we believe, leaving NXT. But just yet again, never doubt him.
We doubt him of Triple H's in his ear, but I'm thinking, yes. I'm thinking, looking at that lockjaw and looking how much or how little this lasted, I think he's just had a word and said, look, I'm going out. Here's the deal. You might not listen to the feedback I do. We can't go 50 minutes. It's ridiculous that their 2 out of 3 falls match went shorter. They're not complaining, but like if you look at it from story beat A to story beat Z, it's ridiculous that this went shorter than the unsanctioned and the one-on-one match they had at, was it Great American Bash?
Something like that,
something
yeah.
like that, whatever. But still, I can't tell if I'm more relieved at what this wasn't than I was thrilled by what it was.
That's fair, yeah.
So there is a part of us that thinks that. However, structurally, this is weird, and I do think that the fans might have complained about it. If you're watching a live show, and presumably you're really invested enough to go into an indoor building in Florida right now, you're probably going to want to watch a cage match. I personally don't, but I'm not there. I'm not buying a ticket or taking a shuttle bus, whatever the hell these people do. Maybe they were booing the fact that they didn't really get a cage match. They just got a finish that took place in a cage. I don't think they like Kyle O'Reilly, or they love Adam Cole so much that Kyle O'Reilly to them is not Adam Cole, but you're going to get more of him than Adam Cole. Hopefully it's not personal. If it is, they're a bunch of dicks, because Kyle O'Reilly always seems like such a hardworking, amiable guy who's given them so much of his body. And let us not forget, like, it takes a warrior's performance from him most nights because he has underlying health problems, he's immunocompromised. Like, it takes a lot out of Kyle O'Reilly to do this. And how much does he give you? He takes so much punishment. Look at those chairs. Like, this group of fans, I'm never one to bury a group of fans, but go on, have some respect. Like, you can reject bad booking and you can't all go to Gorilla and do it in Vince's face, so you do it where you can, in your seat. More often than not, it's bad booking. Show some respect to Kyle goddamn O'Reilly. What a warrior's performance this was. And it wasn't just the stuff that he took. The chair thing was ridiculous, but it was how he sold it. His selling of the ribs and how it informed virtually every single movement he did in that match. Like him, even him coming off the ropes. He's like, oh, that sucks, but I have to do it because I'm in a fight. Like, Kyle O'Reilly was class. Adam Cole was class. I don't think the match was like an outrageous classic. I think structurally it was strange more than anything else. I think people had an expectation for what it was, whether they were up for it or not. And to see it subverted like twice in the first and the third fall was like really strange. It was like, I just get what I want. But I didn't really want that. It was just an odd sensation. Both these guys were great. And I really liked, Kyle O'Reilly's selling was awesome. Adam Cole worked that match as if it wasn't his last night. And I mean that in the nicest way possible. Yeah. He didn't have a job face. He didn't have to go like all out in terms of this hour-long match. And what I liked, let's face it, this has been a totally overwrought, overlong, backwards feud.
Mm-hmm.
That's been a massive disappointment considering if you were in 2019, you said, oh, by the way, Kyle O'Reilly's going to be the babyface and he's going to topple Adam Cole at last. You think, oh, God, can't wait for this. It hasn't been that at all. Mm. The booking, obviously, nothing to do with the wrestlers. I liked how, in the end, the dickhead heel got outsmarted and outfought by the babyface whose head he'd placed under his thumb. I mean, that's just a great finish. Maybe it would have worked better had these fans actually seen a cage match. I certainly didn't want to, but I don't like WWE cage matches. This set of fans feels like the rule-proven exception, apart from the ones who happen to be there who listen to our podcast.
Obviously.
Of course.
Yeah, the BS chant, I'll tackle that first. I want to mention Kyle O'Reilly selling as well, because I like you, I couldn't work out necessarily why that was. Like, we all know pretty much that Kyle O'Reilly's going to win because Cole's out the door, and we, you know, whether
one
it's out
or the other, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think it was related. Maybe the finish, but then I sat there and thought about it for a minute, and I was like, what finish do you want there? Like, I know it's a cage match, yeah. But in their unsanctioned match, he hit that huge top rope knee with a chain wrap around his knee. You ain't topping that. You ain't going to do a bigger pinfall finish than that one, in my opinion. So what they did instead, I thought, was a wonderful recap of what's gone on before. Like I said, the match had spots that was informed by the people and their girlfriends in parts, the people and their history and the brainbuster on the steps and blah, 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 blah. And then you had the fact that earlier on in the match, Cole's knee had been nailed into those chairs as well. And whenever we'd seen these two fight, often the leg lock, the knee bar, whatever you want to call it, has been Cole's weakness. And he uses his knee and he exposes that knee for the last shot, and he has to hit the Panama Sunrise. And blah. I was like, yes, oh, well, he's done it. And then I was just like, what? Where's the pap? You know, and speaking on O'Reilly selling, he's so good that I didn't, you know, fully buy into it. It's like the near falls that you get in matches, where you, like John Cena's near falls, for example, at SummerSlam. I didn't think he was going to win. But by God, I was like, oh, for that. His selling was so good. And, you know, they do the officials coming out after the second fall. That for a split second, my brain went, oh God, that wouldn't that be awful, is if they had to stop this match, because this is Cole's last match one way or another. Like, he's extended this contract, he's done that handshake deal or whatever to go up to this pay-per-view. If they have to be like, X's, we're stopping the match, you're like, oh no, please, you know, end this feud, give me a satisfactory conclusion to this feud. But yeah, putting aside your heart, head-wise, what are you saying for Adam Cole's future? I'm sure we can delve into this more in the coming weeks. Like I said, do you think WWE will offer him the world to stay?
I believe they already have, and I believe that he doesn't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking on Twitter last night, and I know the Young Bucks, they love a tease whether they can deliver it or not. They went so hard on being the Elite in late 2019 on Marty Scurll. If anyone's getting really excited about Adam Cole and the prospect, bear in mind, Marty Scurll was offered a Roman Reigns-level salary and the booking pen to stay with ROH, and AEW probably didn't offer him that much,
mm-hmm.
but they probably thought, you know what, like, I've got bigger arenas, bigger profile, bigger merch opportunities probably. And the Bucks were like, all but said, oh, he's coming. I'm going to put like little pictures of him in the frame and being. They did the usual teasers and he didn't come. So it doesn't necessarily mean the world. The Bucks just love a good tease. They've loved it forever. I love them for it, but it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to deliver anything. But Britt Baker quote-tweeted the Young Bucks' new bio tweet in which they linked to the greatest seances or something like that. Like, Adam Cole is a very smart man. I don't think Adam Cole... The thing about Adam Cole is that he loves the Shawn Michaels style of wrestling and the fact that he's able to do it. He's the only one who's allowed to do a shock face in NXT. Like, he loves, he idolizes Shawn Michaels. So it's going to be a hard decision for him to leave WWE behind. He's got loads of friends there, or did, past tense. Maybe you shouldn't have sacked them before you offered them the deal. I think it's going to AEW.
But a hell of a farewell for one of the greatest NXT performers of all time.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Adam Cole's so goddamn good. He raised me from the dead.
Hmm.
I'm telling you, man, transatlantic flight. I woke up at 4 a.m., drove to Newcastle Airport. This is for WrestleMania 35 weekend. Got up at 4 a.m., had very little sleep. Newcastle Airport, flight to London, transatlantic flight, and I got no sleep whatsoever.
Same.
Got my hotel, knackered, had a shower, worked to an extent, saw the boys, that raised my spirits to an extent, seen some phenomenal matches at TakeOver New York, and I'm like, I'm knackered for this main event. I can't do it. There were moments when I was like, I've just woken up. I've just woken up during the first 10, 15 minutes. Like, I've fallen asleep during the goddamn TakeOver main event. And it got so good, and Adam Cole was so great that he roused me from the dead. He's one of the best talents NXT's ever had. And it's almost fitting that they've lost him, one would hope. It'd be great in AEW. There's so much storyline potential. And he's dead on the main roster. Everyone knows this. It's so fitting that they've let him go and they are going to ruin NXT.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so hypocritical of me for me to say that. I think they've ruined it for the past 2 years. But he's been like, I've loved virtually everything he's done. And yeah, this brand without him is going to be so much worse in terms of its quality. And if you look at everything him and O'Reilly have done together, its popularity, he was like one of the only draws they had. Ever had like a high 700s number, it was because he was highly profiled in a segment.
After this match, we went backstage and we saw the new NXT UK champion, Ilya Dragunov, being asked about his victory. He said the ring general has fallen, talked about being the wrestling czar. And then we got a brief promo from Legado del Fantasma calling out Hit Row. Santos Escobar says, Swerve, we'll find out that there's nobody better than Legado. And Mendoza and Wild say that they're going to finish the job on Tuesday. And Escobar concludes by saying, he who laughs last, laughs best. It is going to be the three-on-three match that we've been looking forward to for quite some time this week on NXT. And then it was time for the main event. Karrion Kross defending the NXT Championship against Samoa Joe, who we haven't seen in a wrestling ring since last February.
Ages.
A long, long time. No Scarlett still. I believe, last thing I read about her, she wasn't medically cleared. That was the rumor going around. Fans in the CW, she didn't care. They were chanting about the lack of Scarlett as Karrion Kross was trying to make his mean entrance. A short match, this, but the right decision, in my opinion, to give him like 12 minutes or whatever it was. Just all bangers, basically. Joe early on goes for the coquina clutch. Kross has to use the ropes to break it, but Joe won't break. So Kross hits a doomsday Saito suplex and a running forearm to the back of Joe's head to gain control. Counters Joe again. Hits another doomsday Saito. Locks an ankle lock in on Samoa Joe, who fights out and sends Kross to the floor and hits, just to talk about rolling back the years, the tope through the ropes for that. Just made me think, oh, good. That Joe's back, basically. Anyway, they come back into the ring. Kross hits an exploder suplex, gets a two count. Joe counters him, counters a running attack of his, hits a power slam for a two count, hits a power bomb again for a two count, and then turns the kick out immediately, recognizes the opportunity, puts an STF on Kross, who just has to get to the ropes to force the break for it. Kross hits a hammerlock knee strike and a DDT, and they trade several near falls on this. Puts in that coquina clutch of his in the center of the ring. But Cross rolls out of it and then locks in the Cross jacket. So Joe fires up. Great spot where it looks like he's fading and he's just gathering himself, basically. Fires up, breaks out, but Cross nails another forearm to the back of Samoa Joe's head. He reverses a clothesline, Joe, though, into Uranagi. Top rope Enziguri. Karrion Kross is then perched on the top rope. And I audibly said, he's not like that.
Yeah.
Because, yes, he sees Karrion Kross in position, picks him up, and hits the muscle buster. 1, 2, 3. Samoa Joe is the NXT champion. Not only that, he's the first ever three-time NXT champion. Karrion Kross, as anticipated, we suspect, is probably main roster bound as well. But as much as we went into this going, well, Karrion Kross is probably going to go in the main roster and Samoa Joe is going to win, I still wouldn't let myself believe it right up until he got him into that muscle buster spot. And I thought, well, if they're letting him do that, that's that. Yeah, but another pleasant surprise on this show for me, this.
Yeah. It was over-delivered, but I really didn't think there was going to be anything to this whatsoever going in. It was worthy, I would describe it as. Mm-hmm. It wasn't particularly great. I don't think it was even very good, but it was worthy. Samoa Joe, you have to caveat his performance with how long he's been out. Like, he retained some of that old explosiveness. He didn't look sluggish, even though he would have been justified in doing so. It's his first match in forever. This didn't benefit from having Volta versus Dragunov on the same show at all. It didn't have that same intensity, that same spark. But look, for once, and I don't know if it's just because of Samoa Joe's particular frame, but for once, Karrion Kross's Doomsday Saito's really felt like perilous. There's one great spot. I don't know if it was just a moment of serendipity, but they always feel so much more potent in the overproduced environment of WWE. There was a spot where, like, Samoa Joe's drooling and some of it's, like, brown-red because he must have...
I think it was a cross jacket, wasn't it? Yeah.
He must have, like, got a little cut inside his mouth. It looks like it was pissing blood from his mouth. That was class. I love blood. I just do. Such a little edgelord at times when it comes to pro wrestling.
I did think that added to your Dragon Horse celebration. Harry Potter scar on his head, basically.
Absolutely. Everyone should just do coast to coast, up and down the card. Look, this was worthy. There were moments where it jolted into electricity. There were moments where they cast doubt over the outcome. They did as good a job as they could have in a match that realistically paled in comparison, but sentimental factor behind Joe elevated it as well. They did the job, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I thought it was just the right decision and a great way of passing that torch, and at least a believable way of transitioning from someone who destroyed Ciampa and, you know, ran through all those other men when they were challenging him, the Fatal Five Way, just ruined all of them. I thought, like, it's maybe obviously the newness of Joe in terms of considering him as a title challenger, but I thought in terms of a transition of the championship, I don't think they could have done much more here.
No, not at all. Not at all. But they had a job to do and they did it as best they could, I think. A
tremendous takeover, arguably helped by the fact that I went in going, Pete Dunne shrug sort of thing. But afterwards, I'll probably be gladly going back and watching the whole thing again. But certainly, Dragunov, Volta is getting a rewatch
even
tonight.
Even better on the second occasion.
Oh, my days. But let us know your thoughts all in all. Like you say, before we wrap up, actually, the future of NXT is looking, in terms of this is the last takeover as we know it, a hell of a sign-off, but very worrying times ahead for that show.
Ah, Christ, I mean, the next 4 weeks are going to be drivel content-wise. We apologise in advance. They're taping a month or something. Mm-hmm. My God, that's going to feel so inessential to do anything with. It's weird. Do they stop doing takeovers?
Please, no.
Well, it's one of those where it's like, if they're not going to do banger matches, which is the calling card, then you're just going to annoy the audience into thinking that, oh, well, I missed that one. I missed the old thing. Do they care about the audience? Who the hell knows? I've got no idea at this point.
Well, we'll probably delve into this more in the coming weeks, certainly for the NXT preview out tomorrow, of course. But let us know your thoughts on NXT TakeOver 36 on Twitter, at WhatCultureWWE. Watch there. You can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
M. Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE, as I said. Make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling for daily wrestling podcasts. You can also check out our AEW Rampage review, all about CM Punk's AEW debut right now. We've got the Raw preview coming out, and the Raw review and the NXT preview. A busy old week, basically, in terms of wrestling podcasts. So subscribe to get them in your feed as and when they come out. But this has been the NXT TakeOver 36 review. My thanks to Michael Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.